Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm joined by Hugo and I'm Josh, and we are here to talk to you today about political spectrums and political models, which one is best for visualizing your values.
Yeah, and so this is something that we actually got as a tip from one of our viewers, so thank you. And we're going to be looking into that because, of course, everyone has a bit different political leanings, political values. I mean, this is nothing new, but everyone always is bickering about how to visualize it best, what the spectrum is supposed to be, and whenever someone brings up one kind of spectrum, one kind of political space, well, he gets shouted at because it's obviously wrong, it's obviously not ideal, it's not, doesn't represent your values correctly and stuff like that. And so this is what I wanted to do, to kind of go through some of these to point out which ones are good, which ones or better, which ones are worse, and what are some of the advantages and drawbacks of each one. And so we actually took some of the tests, and so we can have some fun kind of analyzing our own results and figuring out whether those are, whether we're happy with them or not, and what they can tell us about the test.
I know I was certainly happy with some of them and not others. There were some pretty horrendous results that I was appalled with. We'll get onto that in a minute, though.
No spoiling, you know, it's going to come up. So, yeah, as a political channel or a company, like, this is, we talk about politics all the time. We talk about left and right all the time, progressives and conservatives, stuff like that. That is something that is constantly discussed. We do it, but we rarely ever define it right, because it's, if you want to define it every time you use it, well, that's not viable. Like, you can't do it because it's too vague, too kind of, it's not rigid, it's not concrete enough so that you could actually do it every time you use it.
It's also impractical as well. Like, just having to clarify every word that you use every time you use it, it's kind of annoying. And people generally have an impression of what you mean, and even if they don't, they can understand it by the context. You don't really feel the need to define your terms when it's just in it like a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And so what we're doing here is to exploring it more closely, like, what is it? What is the left and the right? Is it justified to divide it like that or some other ways? And so I actually I've come across people who were maybe not political, not too political, and when I talked to them about, for example, the left and right, or and what it is, and like the big parties in the UK or the US, they would say, okay, well, there is the left and there is the right, and one party is the left and one party is the right, and that's it. The spectrum of politics is just to place those two parties at the end of those spectrums, and that's what it's for, right? And so I've actually got those responses from some people who are not political, as I said, right? And so it's there's nothing wrong about being non-political, you know, that's it's a perfectly fine life choice, but it illustrates that a lot of people are not really familiar with what different political values can be and where you can actually be in that space, right? So it's not just about parties. If you're talking about the left-right spectrum, for example, it's not just about saying, okay, well, one side is the Democrats and one side is the Republicans, something like that. It's all also about, like, political beliefs, right? Not just those parties, but personal beliefs, ethical beliefs, philosophical values or cultural values. Like, all of these are something that can be placed on spectrums. Of course, you can place anything on a spectrum, but something that it tells you about something about political life or political realities around us.
It's not really surprising that you got those answers, because to someone who doesn't really understand kind of the vast possibilities of the political theories that you can have, the major two parties in probably what is the norm of a two-party system, that kind of makes sense that they see, okay, one's the left, one's the right, and that's the lens that I see the world, because it's only filtered through what's relevant to them.
Yeah. And that's why also, if you have it like that, the interesting product of it is that if there is a third party, for example, that comes onto the stage and says, okay, I'm the third party, well, I'm something else than these two, well, then it doesn't make sense for a person who sees it like that, like, not very, like, politically savvy, because they're like, what? Like, the spectrum has two sides, like, how can you be a third side of it? Doesn't make sense, you know, go away. And so that also produces this kind of tendency towards saying, okay, well, this doesn't make sense, so why bother? And so, yeah, let's start with a basic division, because it's left and right? Well, we have to start with it always when we talk about the political spectrum, because that is where it all kind of starts. Before the French Revolution, before the turn towards democracy and more participative politics in history, you wouldn't really have people talking about political spectrums, because your involvement in politics would be very small or non-existent. You would have some philosophers who would talk about politics, but they would have no need to classify themselves according to some kind of spectrum or lines or something like that. And so it's only relevant when a large mass of people starts thinking about, oh, where do I fall when it comes to politics, when it comes to political opinions, right? And so before that, you don't really have that kind of discussion. And the left versus right spectrum, that comes, of course, I think everyone knows from the French National Assembly during the French Revolution. You had the assembly, and there was the president in the middle of the assembly, and you had the left side of the room and the right side of the room. And on the left side of the room sat the proponents and the defenders of the revolution, the French Revolution, and on the right side sat the monarchists, so those who defended the king and the kind of traditional ways. They didn't want to have a new regime. And so this is where it comes from. And it's kind of interesting to compare that to how we see the right and the left now, or how it's usually portrayed in kind of mainstream culture or mainstream political circles, right? Because it's quite far away from what it used to be, even though it started like that, and there's kind of a continuous evolution up until now, right? And so one interesting thing about it is that it started in France around that time, and in France it's been used more or less continuously ever since, but it only spread outside of France much later, so like decades later, for example, right? And in, for example, for the US, it only arrived and started being used in the US in the 1920s, the left and right division.
So do you know how they referred to different political parties before? I suppose it was just the Republicans and Democrats, and they also kind of flipped sometime around that time. I'm not an expert at that early on in the US's history. But
yeah, there is this. This is kind of a contentious topic, right? People disagree very strongly on whether there was this shift or not, whether the parties actually switched platforms or not. Like the parties themselves and kind of the traditional history says that they switched and there was this kind of move, but it's not really clear that there was. And but I didn't really want to get into that. We can contemplate some other time about the history of US political parties when I am more informed about them. I'm not as informed as I could be now. So let's get back to the right-left spectrum. It has evolved, of course. It's not the same today. And one of the major kind of evolutionary point of it was that socialism and the movement towards communism came on the scene during the 19th century. Right? It existed before that, but it only became a major movement in mid-19th century, let's say. And so that kind of crashed the spectrum a little bit, because before that it was, okay, pro-revolution, anti-revolution, well, that's easy, right? That's one issue. It's very easy to have two sides on that one issue. So there's like, it's not difficult to have that discussion, right? But when it comes to, okay, well, now we're focusing on other issues as well. It's not just about whether we want the French Revolution to happen and for the regime to change, but also kind of social issues, political issues, issues of representation or voting, everything, right? Anything you can imagine. When it becomes general politics, well, then it's not as easy anymore to say, okay, this is the one side, this is the other side, and there's no more sides. And especially when you can have overlaps between those. So like some people are on one side at some time, and at other times they're on the other side. So that doesn't work anymore. And so when socialists came onto the scene, that was a complete mess now. Okay, well, it was the left versus the right, the revolution versus the monarchy. And, well, what is it now? Well, it's a third party crashing it again, right?
So socialism again ruining stuff. I mean, lesson as old as time.
Anyway, when socialism came onto the scene, it became, of course, part of the left. You know, the left started to be associated with socialism, and kind of makes sense because you can see the left and the right as being, well, the central idea behind those two sides being revolution and kind of perpetual revolution on one side, and the defense of the status quo on the other, right? That's one of the ways in which those two sides can be viewed. And this view has an advantage of being usable throughout history, right? So it's not tied to a specific issue. And so you don't have the problem of saying, well, this issue no longer applies because we no longer live in the 19th century and there's modern civilization that looks different. And so, like, it's nonsensical to have this issue that would determine those two sides. But if you say, okay, well, this side argues for perpetual change, perpetual revolution, perpetual overthrow of the old and establishment of something new, and the other side defends the old and says, okay, well, this is tradition, this is what we need to keep, well, then that can be kind of transplanted into every situation that you can have.
It's almost like order versus chaos, the original kind of spectrum.
Well, not necessarily, because if you have chaos in the old...
Well, I suppose so. I'm being a bit flippant.
No, of course. It makes sense in some situations, and of course that's what you'd imagine now in today's political situation, right? But it's not necessarily something that would always apply. You mm-hmm. could have like a very chaotic period where there is just turmoil everywhere, and well, the...
That sounds like revolutionary France all over.
If we stick to the definition, we have to say, okay, well, in this particular moment, well, if the right is for the preservation of and defense of status quo, well, they defend this turmoil and chaos, right? And left then would be, okay, for progress towards order. Well, I mean, that's... I don't think that's a reasonable definition, right? But I'm just saying, okay, if we were to apply it pedantically to every situation, that's what it would result in. So I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's somewhat useful. And so when kind of Marx became famous and the movement around him, socialism became kind of part of the left, and Marx actually called the English and French revolutions bourgeois revolutions, right? He didn't call them like socialist revolutions or anything like that. He didn't associate socialism with the French Revolution because he said, okay, well, there were the bourgeois classes which fought against the old royalty, and there's going to be a link below where he's talking about the details of it, like what classes were with what other classes and against what other classes, right? And so he's saying, well, those were bourgeois revolutions, and so that was the movement from feudalism towards capitalism, and then, well, in the future there's going to need to be a movement from capitalism towards socialism, there's going to be a socialist revolution. And so it made sense in that kind of view to say, okay, well, we're the left. They were for revolution then, were for revolution now. It's a different kind of revolution. It's different classes, different alignments, but it's still basically the same thing. So that was kind of the thinking behind it. I think that that's what would intuitively make sense in that at that point. And that's why you would associate with the left rather than the right, because if the right were royalists and they lost, well, you still don't want to take up that mantle, because why would you? You know, that's tainted. It's bad. So it's better to take up the space that used to be occupied by the liberals or by the bourgeoisie and say, okay, well, those were the revolutionaries then, and we're going to be the revolutionaries now.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.